Well, thank you, Karen, very much for those kind words, and it's a pleasure to be here at the forum. The Reserve Bank of Australia has a number of roles in the payment system. It operates the real-time gross settlement system for high-value payments. It provides banking and payment services to government clients, and it oversees and regulates the payment system. And it's in the capacity of overseer of the payment system that I'm talking to you today. The Payment System Board of the Reserve Bank has a mandate to promote efficiency and competition in the Australian payment system, as well as the stability of the system. The Reserve Bank oversees the system to determine how best to achieve these objectives, including regulating if necessary. So today I'm going to talk about something that can be very, very important in achieving these goals, and that's collaboration. Payment systems are networks, and as networks, they have a couple of important features. The first is that there are externalities associated with networks. As they get larger, the benefits increase disproportionately. So we see this in all kinds of payment systems. For example, the more merchants that take cards, the more benefit there is to hold a card. And the more people that hold cards, the more benefits there are to merchants of accepting cards. So the network effect is what both can make it difficult for new systems to get off the ground and also entrench large networks. The second feature of networks is that they involve people working together. In order to get the positive benefits from networks, there needs to be a commonality of interests among participants that are often competitors. And when this is done well, it benefits both participants and end users and the wider community. Conversely, when some participants don't collaborate, they can make it difficult for everyone else to realise the benefits. So today I'm going to talk about examples where collaboration is necessary to improve our payment systems in Australia, instances where firms that are typically competitors are being asked to lean in. There's two I'm going to highlight, the new payments platform and efforts to reduce fraud. And I'm going to finish up with a few remarks on one area of the payment system where we would like to see continued competition. So first, the new payments platform. This is a very good example of industry collaboration in recent years, has been the development and then the implementation of the new payments platform, or as we like to call it, the NPP. The NPP is an infrastructure that allows instant payments to be made and received 24/7 with richer information and simpler addressing. Its genesis was the Payment System Board's strategic review of innovation in the payment system. And when the strategic review was announced in 2010, it noted that the objective was to identify areas of innovation in the Australian payment system that could be improved through more effective cooperation between stakeholders and regulators. The final conclusions, released in 2012, set out some very high-level strategic objectives for the payment system and invited the industry to determine how best to meet those objectives. They included the ability for users to make real-time payments, to send more complete remittance information with payments, to address payments in a relatively simple way, and to make and receive payments outside normal business hours. The industry response to this was to develop and build the NPP to meet these objectives. The NPP went live in February 2018 and it's slowly but steadily building volume. Now this was a very ambitious project. It was long, it took about 4 years from the industry commitment until go live, and it still isn't complete, I'd have to say. It was complicated technically, requiring not only a central build, but also substantial work within financial institutions. And as a large cross-industry project, it was complicated logistically. But despite this and the fact that there is still work to do, it has been a successful project. And I think there are a few things that contributed to the effective collaboration that delivered the NPP. First, the Reserve Bank and the Payment System Board, with the public interest in mind, gave a very clear message to the industry that building this new infrastructure was important. The conclusions of the strategic review set out very clearly what the Reserve Bank was expecting the industry to deliver on. And while the bank provided the industry with an opportunity to devise a proposal, it was always clear that the Reserve Bank regarded this as a must-do if the Australian payment system is to be capable of providing the services expected by users into the future. The Payment System Board followed progress closely and provided continued encouragement, both publicly and, where necessary, privately, through senior-level contact between the Reserve Bank and other participating financial institutions. Furthermore, the Reserve Bank demonstrated its own commitment to the project in numerous ways. It was a member of the Project Steering Committee and a number of working groups, committing senior resources to these groups. It also took up a shareholding in NPP Australia Limited, which is the company that runs the NPP, and it built the Fast Settlement Service to settle payments individually in real time, 24/7. A second reason why collaboration was successful was that most institutions realised they were participating in a project that would have significant and broad benefits. There were already a number of fast retail payment services around the world, and customers were increasingly expecting payments to keep up with their 24/7 lifestyle. I think most participants understood this. A third element was the way that the project was organised, with a dedicated independent team to manage the project and repeated reminders of the shared vision which was agreed earlier in the project's life. And a key aspect of this was the social contract that all participants agreed to. These are competitors, remember. This contract emphasised things such as constructive challenge, respect, active listening, positivity, and innovative thinking. The result is that we now have a first-rate payment system infrastructure that will be a platform for ongoing innovation. In many respects, Australia's fast payment system is at the cutting edge of such systems. We were not the first to have a fast payment system, but we have been able to learn from experience overseas and improve the model with features such as ISO 20022 message formats, real-time settlement, and the addressing service. And the design of the system, which allows for competitive overlays to use the infrastructure, gives the system flexibility to meet the future needs of the users of the Australian payment system. Now, since going live in February 2018, the system has been gradually increasing its volumes. Go back to the other graph, please. In April, 16 million transactions were processed through the NPP, amounting to $13 billion. Now, this is still pretty small relative to the volumes that pass through other retail payment systems, but it's growing steadily, and it's growing at least... next graph, please. Thank you. It's growing steadily and at least as quickly as some of the comparable overseas fast payment services when they were introduced. And you can see here the comparison in our growth years after launch compared with Swish in Sweden and the fast payment service in the UK. One of the positive aspects, actually, of this particular implementation has been the broad participation of many small financial institutions. So customers of around 50 small banks, credit unions and building societies were able to make and receive fast payments from day one, and that number has since grown to around 70. On a less positive note, we have been somewhat underwhelmed by the progress of some of the major banks. Some of them have been slower to provide their customers with fast payment services. The majors have all taken different approaches to which functionality they will provide and which customers to bring on first. And this, of course, is their prerogative. We know they have a lot on their plates, and they are in the best position to make decisions on what to prioritise. We also know that they have large and complex IT systems. But with some big banks slow to complete NPP-related changes to their internal systems, there remain large numbers of customers that do not have a full range of convenient options for initiating fast payments, even if their accounts can be reached by incoming fast payments. There's also some more work to be done on increasing the number of accounts that are reachable using the NPP. Now, these gaps have made it very difficult for NPP participants to market their service to their customers. So the value of the NPP to users is much lower than it could be if payment initiation and account reach were more progressed. That is, the positive network effects that I referred to earlier have been held back. In order to realise the full benefits of the NPP, most financial institutions, particularly the larger ones, need to be involved in sending and receiving fast payments. There's still more to be done, and NPPA, which is the company that runs it, is keen to facilitate new applications that use the real-time data-rich functionality. But industry should be aware that the regulator and the public in general will be expecting the payments industry to deliver on the promise of the NPP. In light of concerns that had been raised by a number of stakeholders, the Reserve Bank, with assistance from the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, has recently undertaken a public consultation on NPP access and functionality, and we're expecting to publish the conclusions and recommendations from this consultation in the coming weeks. I want to turn to another area where collaboration is important in payment system, and that's fraud prevention and mitigation. Individual institutions all have their own way of dealing with fraud. In card payments, for example, most institutions have algorithms that look for payments that seem out of the ordinary, and then they seek to verify with the customer as soon as possible whether the payment was genuine. Fraud tends to move to the point of least resistance, so there are very strong incentives for individual institutions to make sure their systems for preventing, detecting and mitigating fraud keep pace with their competitors. Otherwise, they might find themselves a particular target of fraud. But there are also good reasons to think about fraud mitigation collectively. First, if there's one participant in a payment system that is very prone to fraud, it could impact the confidence of consumers in using the system. There is therefore a collective incentive to ensure that everyone in the system is meeting certain minimum standards of fraud prevention. Second, and relatedly, payment systems often have protections for users of the system, so that if a user finds themselves the victim of fraud through no fault of their own, they are not out of pocket. For example, card systems have protocols for dealing with fraudulent transactions on cards that arise from theft of card details. These protocols need to apply to all participants in the system to meet their aims. Now, PIN at POS was a good example earlier in this decade of a successful collaboration between financial institutions in Australia to improve security of card transactions at the point of sale. Card transactions through the domestic FPOS system have always required authorisation by personal identification number, PIN, at the terminal. Authorisation of transactions through other card systems, however, so MasterCard, Visa, American Express, Diners, that was typically via signature. Signature authorisation was much more susceptible to fraud. So the industry agreed on a project to move to PIN authorisation of all card transactions. This was a classic collaborative opportunity. If one institution tried to go it alone, it might find resistance from its customers. So cardholders who didn't want to change, resistant to the PIN, merchants who didn't want to have to upgrade their terminals. Furthermore, the fraud would probably just move to a merchant that didn't require PINs. So maybe the problem would have been solved in the end, but in order to realise the benefits of a move to PIN in a reasonable time frame, the individual participants had to move together. Another more recent example of industry collaboration to address fraud is in what we call card-not-present transactions. Consumers are increasingly making purchases online, and cards are a very easy way to do this. But it's more difficult for an online merchant to verify that the card being used belongs to the person using it. As a result, fraud rates on card-not-present transactions are high, and they are rising quite quickly. This can reduce confidence in the card payment system, and as merchants typically bear the cost of online fraud, it increases their costs of doing business and ultimately prices to consumers. It's bad for society as a whole. There are ways of authenticating customers online, but the greatest resistance to adopting these has come from merchants who worry that if they have anti-fraud measures, this will introduce friction into the checkout process, and that will cause the purchaser to drop out of the transaction. Indeed, there's actually a bit of a prisoner's dilemma here in economic terms. Two merchants would be better off if they both introduce anti-fraud measures, but they each worry that if they adopt it, they'll lose sales to their competitor who hasn't adopted it, so neither adopts it. Recognising that this was a problem that could benefit from collaborative solution, the Australian financial institutions are currently working together to develop a framework for dealing with card-not-present fraud. Under the auspices of the Australian Payments Network, the industry will be mandating strong customer authentication at merchants that have high fraud rates. This will involve a process that checks two or more independent factors to authenticate the customer. For example, a one-time authentication code might be sent to the customer's mobile phone, or there might be a fingerprint authentication. The goal is to reduce the cost of fraud as a whole rather than just shifting it between individual merchants and financial institutions. I want to finish by speaking very briefly about competition in the debit card market in Australia. Debit cards are the non-cash payment method of choice for many Australians. Debit cards are connected to a customer's deposit account and draw funds for payment directly from that account. Over the past 10 years, the annual number of debit card transactions per person in Australia has risen from 80 to around 260, and it's still rising. Most debit cards in Australia are what we call dual network cards. Payments made from these cards can be processed across two networks. The network brand on the front, and the most obvious, is typically an international scheme, MasterCard or Visa, and on the back is usually the FPOS brand, the Australian Domestic Debit System. The Payment System Board and the Reserve Bank have been very supportive of these cards because they provide convenience and choice to both consumers and merchants. When dipping or swiping their card, consumers could choose the credit button to direct the transaction through the international scheme, or they could push the check savings button to direct it through the FPOS system. Merchants could also indicate to customers which network they would prefer to be used. So dual network cards can play a role in keeping downward pressure on the costs of card acceptance to merchants and indirectly to consumers. The move to contactless payments, or tap and go as it's often referred, however, that's muted some of the competitive pressures that can come from dual network cards. Since FPOS moved to tap and go later than MasterCard and Visa, a substantial number of payments that previously were processed by the FPOS network are now being processed by the international schemes. And while consumers wouldn't have noticed anything different here, businesses have seen their costs of card acceptance rise as processing through the international schemes is more expensive than FPOS. The bank has attempted to ensure that merchants continue to have choice by obtaining commitments from the banks to allow their merchant customers to choose the network through which the contactless transactions are processed. Some smaller acquirers, such as Tyro and First Data, have been faster than the major banks to provide their customers with this functionality. But the major banks are now offering or are about to offer merchant choice, and this should assist in keeping downward pressure on the fees merchants pay. But as payments move to different form factors, such as mobile phones or wearables, new technologies are introduced, there is a risk that some might use it as an opportunity to lock out competitors. The Reserve Bank is of the view that in moving to new technologies, merchants and consumers should continue to have a choice of debit card network. Rules or policies of any scheme that have the effect of removing choice will reduce competition and result in rising costs to merchants. The bank will be looking closely at developments in the debit card market to ensure that as far as possible, there is a level playing field for the alternative debit schemes. We will also work closely with the ACCC as necessary to identify and address any anti-competitive behaviour. In the specific case of least cost routing, we would not want to see the benefits of competition from this innovation thwarted by issuers taking FPOS off dual network cards. So in conclusion, I'd say competition is important in payments. It delivers better customer experiences, more convenience, and innovative products. But as networks, collaboration is also often required. The development of the NPP and recent work on addressing fraud in card payment systems are good examples of where participants that are normally competitors have cooperated to ultimately deliver better outcomes for Australian consumers and merchants. These collaborative efforts, however, are not without their challenges. As the payment system regulator, the Reserve Bank remains willing to engage with industry and facilitate collaboration where this is in the public interest. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Michelle. And indeed, you touched on what for economists and indeed regulators our two favourite C's: competition, where it's healthy and effective, and consumer outcomes. And thank you for agreeing for a little carbon-free fireside chat this afternoon. So we won't be taking questions from the floor, folks. Now, Michelle, you shared with us some really interesting comparator metrics, I think Sweden and the UK, in terms of the rollout of the MPP and Australian take-up rates. If you would now to sort of step back for a moment after a couple of years of, well, 4 or 5 years of the journey that the RBA's been through here, where do you see Australia today in the international leaderboard in terms of, you know, a pro-competition and a consumer-friendly payment system?
Sure. Well, I think we're right up there, actually. Australians do have a reputation of being very fast adopters of new technology. And in fact, the schemes often tell us that if they're going to trial new technology and innovation, they tend to look to Australia to have a go at it. We were very quick on the uptake of Tap and Go once it got going. So I think with the new payments platform, as I mentioned in my speech, we are really at the cutting edge here. Our fast payment services offers a number of things that others don't. There are certain advantages in being a fast follower in these sorts of circumstances. So I'm very confident that what we're ending up with is something that's really right out there.
Okay. So maybe if we return to the other C, and that's the competition C, it'd be really great if you could just unbundle or elaborate for us on how does the MPP translate to competitive outcomes within the banking system?
Sure. So I think there's probably three facets to this. So the first is that, and you mentioned this in your opening remarks, the NPP was developed as a utility model and it's an open access infrastructure. And so it promotes competition by providing a number of different ways that financial institutions and potentially businesses can connect and use the functionality of the NPP. So it's very much designed to encourage many financial institutions and businesses to use the. So that there's that. So that's good for competition. One thing I should add is that we have a number of aggregators who are directly connected to the NPP, and they provide substantial access to a number of small institutions. So this is really good for those small institutions. You know, they were the ones, a large number of them that were there on day one. That was fabulous. So that was a great success story. The second point is that it's designed to encourage competitive overlay provision. So this is where different firms, it might be fintechs, it might be banks, they can develop services that use the NPP, and they can develop that and they can compete amongst one another with these services using the actual utility of the NPP. And the final facet I would mention is that the NPP has this thing called PayID. This is the addressing service, which allows you to associate a phone number or an ABN with bank account details. This actually will be quite helpful, I think, for consumers in being able to change banks, because at the moment it's quite a bit of effort to go and change all your banking arrangements and notify all the merchants you have arrangements with. If you've got a phone number, you can associate that with whatever bank account you like. You can port it. So all you need to give businesses is your PayID, your phone number, and you can port that more easily. There's another development which NPP is working on as well, which is a consent and mandate service, which ultimately will, I think, make it easier for people to move their direct debits, which is also a very... So these things that are sort of standing as barriers to people moving financial institutions, I think it will assist in that way as well.
OK. Well, let's move to the second C, and one of our favourite C's, the consumer outcomes. So the immediate funds availability that we get delivered through the MPP, which is in pretty stark contrast to the current but old-style direct electronic payment system where there's a one to two-day delay before funds availability occurs. And we're now in a world where transactions are ubiquitous. Like, rewind the clock 30 years, a household might do 10 transactions a week. Most folk today can do 10 transactions on the tram before they get to the office. So when you look at it through that perspective, do we have a sense then of across the transactions that we've got now in Australia, what percentage of them are instantaneous?
So the NPP itself is still only very small. In the graph I showed, there's around about 16 million NPP transactions. The direct entry system, by comparison, is about 800 million transactions, and cards are about 200 million transactions. So it's still small. But as I said, it's been designed to allow lots of transactions to actually move through these systems. So I anticipate that once the network effects are there and consumers can be confident that the payments will go to the person they want to send it to and they'll go quickly, I think people will start to take it up and you'll see things move very quickly. And there will be some transactions that won't need instantaneous payment, but I think people will really like the idea that once the money... So at the moment, the money comes out of my account, but the person I paid can't use it for a day or so. I think people will really like the idea that once it's gone, they'll be able to use it.
So clearly the take-up rates is the clear focus for the RBA in terms of what one of your litmus tests of success of the MPP getting up and running, so it does deliver all those benefits. And you did make reference, as I think your governor has previously, to the slower pace of take-up. Indeed, I think you used the word underwhelming pace of take-up by the big four banks. And I guess, what's the critical mass point for you, and what is it that the RBA can do to sort of nudge or shove the banks along a little bit here, Michelle?
Critical mass involves all four major banks. I think there's no doubt about that. It doesn't need absolutely every financial institution, but it needs the big four banks in Australia if it's going to be successful. And we're gradually getting there. So that's positive. But I think the Reserve Bank can't force... We can't regulate to make them do it. So we've got our usual arm-twisting, cajoling, encouraging, and I think we've done a pretty good job at getting things done just by using those stock standard moral suasion techniques.
Okay. We'll be getting back to that later this afternoon when we do the regulatory toolkit after lunch, because that's definitely one of them. From the consumer's perspective, though, how much transparency do they have when you're talking about, you know, the tap and go versus and what triage that takes them through? How do they know how their payments are being transacted and whether or not they're getting the lower cost option with the MPP?
Sure. So the MPP at the moment, banks are not charging customers for making payments through the MPP. So I think there's a couple of things about transparency. It's obviously very important that consumers have transparency over costs. The fact that there's a brand called OSCO, which they haven't been able to really advertise a lot yet, but there's a brand which will tell people, I know that's going to be a fast payment. So that's transparent for them that it's going through that particular system. So I think they will, and their banks obviously are under obliged to make sure that they are aware if there are any transaction costs on their payments. But at the moment, NPP customers aren't being charged.
Okay. And I guess there's, and on a final note maybe, because I'm just keeping a watch on the time, and we're going to hit our KPIs today being on time. With any network, it inevitably transforms and changes over time. Do you see with the evolution of technology and the current MPP that there will be an MPP 2 down the track?
I don't think so much an NPP 2. I think the way it's been designed is to allow functionality and overlay services to use it. It will evolve over time in terms of functionality. I don't think we'll necessarily need to rebuild the whole infrastructure again, because the way it's been designed, I think, allows for functionality to be perhaps introduced in a centralised way, and also for new functionality to come through overlay services. Yeah. So I think that's the way we'll see it evolve.
And that competitive dynamic in that overlay,
yep,
bringing the innovation with it.
Yes, that's yes.
All right. Well, look, thank you for translating what can at times be a very dry topic when it's talked about into something that's very tangible and linking it to the two C's that matter, competition and consumer outcomes. So please join me in thanking Michelle.